drinking town with a football problem. Hey everybody, welcome into the Piffles Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Alex.
I'm Steve.
I'm Fralin.
I'm Amy.
And gang's all here, so let's get right down to it. Follow us on Twitter at Piffles Pod. You can follow me at RealAlexD.
You can follow me at Safamod.
Myself at Fernie635.
And I'm at CFL Hottieball.
Make sure you like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. And we're also on Instagram. Just search Piffles Pod. As always, Piffles Podcast, fueled by Coney Island Poutine Cafe, the best poutine in the prairies. Two locations in Regina. They deliver. They have a BOGO deal on right now. Buy one large poutine, get a large regular poutine for free. So, I mean, you can't go wrong with that. Coney Island Poutine Cafe in Regina. Coming up on this week's show, we got a lot to get to, a lot of CFL stuff going on. We'll have the latest Rider and CFL news. SJ Green got traded to Toronto from Montreal. Brock Sunderland signs as the Eskimos general manager. And it's finally here. Mini camps are underway. Real football is upon us. That just means we're that much closer to the football season. Hashtag, is it June yet? Almost. We'll also have a Piffles player profile. I have a rant that I've been steaming on for about a week or so here, and I can't wait to let loose on that. We're going to talk to former Riders punter, Eddie Johnson, the man, the myth, the stash, Eddie Johnson, see what he's up to nowadays. And we're going to take a quick look at the Riders draft, preview the draft coming up next week. And we're going to take a look at the BC Lions and see what they've done in the offseason. We're going to talk to Brian from the BC Lions Den a little bit later on. But let's get right down to it. Minicamp is here. And for the Riders, the biggest story, the only story, is Vince Young. Now, as of when we've recorded this, there's been 2 days of minicamp, and he felt that he's gotten a little bit sluggish to start, but he's gotten better and better as it goes on. What do you guys make of minicamp?
I didn't know that anybody else was at minicamp based on coverage thus far. It's kind of gone how I've expected it, especially at the quarterback position. Kevin Glenn has been his usual reliable self. Vince Young is fresh and getting his feet wet, but getting better as he goes. And from all accounts and purposes, Bridge and Bennett have done fairly well. So,
yeah, Vince Young seems to be getting a lot of the attention. There's been a couple defensive players. Bingham, I've heard his name quite a bit. A couple of receivers, but other than that, it's pretty much the Vince Young show from what I'm hearing.
And really, given how his announcement kind of happened, that's not much of a shock. They're going to push that story as hard as they can because it's getting us media attention in the States, and that's big money right there.
Actually, there was a good article written by Joel Gass in the Three Down Nation as well, too. Don't make much of minicamp, and he's right. This is big for the players themselves that go to minicamp because they're all rookies, CFL rookies, free agents, and the quarterbacks are there. So quarterbacks get to knock off a little bit of rust. In Vince Young's case, he gets to get a little bit more up to speed in the CFL game. But this is basically for an invitation to main camp. And honestly, out of the, 40 guys that are there, 2-3 realistically might actually make the opening day roster. Like, we're never going to hear from a lot of these guys again. So if one guy looks good, I mean, great, he'll get a shot at training camp, but remember, he's going against guys that aren't going to make it to the training camp roster. So temper expectations is the one thing that I take away from minicamp. I'm mostly just excited that football is basically here.
Yeah, so he was exactly right. You can't get too excited about what you're seeing because it's a bunch of nobodies going up against nobodies. If we can pull 2, 3, 4 players out of this and add them to a already improving roster, that's good enough for me.
And minicamp brings us to our Piffles player profile this week. I really want to know.
Tell me, who are you? Today's Piffles player profile hails from Houston, Texas. Born May 18th, 1983, Vince Young played high school and college ball in Texas, where he would go on to win the MVP award of the 2006 Rose Bowl, along with a Heisman Trophy nomination and as the best player in college football and a national championship. Later drafted third overall by the Tennessee Titans, Vince Young would go on to start in 13 games that season, throwing for 2,200 yards, rushing for 552 yards, which at the time was a rookie quarterback rushing record, since beaten by Cam Newton and Robert Griffin III, I believe. But anyways, and he threw 7 touchdowns en route to a 2006 Offensive Rookie of the Year award.
He was also actually named as a reserve for that Pro Bowl in his first season. Over the course of his NFL career, Vince Young would start 50 games, throwing for almost 9,000 yards and 46 touchdowns. After bouncing around a few rosters from 2012 to 2014, including my very own Green Bay Packers, Vince Young announced his retirement from football in 2014. And that all changed in March of 2017 when Chris Jones picked up the phone, called Vince Young, brought him out of retirement, and at the age of 33, he's looking to make his mark on the CFL.
And we went with Vince Young because, again, minicamp, that's the main story, and honestly, he's going to be the main story through training camp as well next month. He's the biggest story of the Riders right now.
You don't see many Madden cover athletes up in the CFL, so it's good to see.
And thankfully, we've gone from the big joke or the big player signings going from, you know, Vince Young just being a big name away from the whole Vince Young being a big guy that we got at the at his signing, you know, back in March when most of the comments were related to his rather large nature at the time.
Well, and you can tell he's kind of slimmed down a little bit as well too. Doesn't look as big as he did there from the pictures that we've seen from minicamp, but
I've seen that he's lost 15 pounds since we signed him. So,
and I mean, if he's legitimately serious about this, that I mean, that's there really is no risk in this for the Riders because, let's be honest, he's not going to be here to be a backup. He's not going to be Kevin Glenn's backup. He's here to beat out Kevin Glenn. If he does, that's great because that means he's better than Kevin Glenn, and Kevin Glenn's again that insurance policy as our backup, and if he doesn't beat him out. Well, that's good because Kevin Glenn's good to go. Vince Young's not ready. Might as well bring those young guys behind him, see what they have behind him. So, again, I think it's a no-risk situation here just because he's not going to be – if he's not the starter, he's not going to be on the team. So we'll see how that goes with him. Other Rider news coming out the last little bit. The Riders released Greg Jones last week, and I can't say we're really surprised too much by that.
No, after the Henock Mwamba signing and clearly going Canadian at that spot, Greg Jones was expendable. For us, he would have been nothing more than a good special teams guy, which he's making too much money to be just a good special teams guy. He'll catch on somewhere, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect him to be a free agent for too long. He'll find a team and be just as good for them as he was for us.
Not that he was a bad player, because he wasn't. He was a definite upgrade from what we had in 2015. But let's be honest, that's setting the bar pretty low. He was good for us, but going Canadian, we have that ratio breaker, and with Chris Jones' track record of finding linebackers the past couple of years, I'm not too upset about it. I'm sure we'll find something here in minicamp and training camp, and we'll be good to go there. And the other Rider news coming out: Justin Cox released, was charged for the third time with domestic violence. The team had absolutely no choice; they had to cut him, and. Really quick before we move on, your guys' take on the situation?
I pretty much said all I want to say on Twitter. I've got there's no place in that in the CFL for that kind of thing. I'm glad to see him gone based on his history and based on what he's been charged with again. I know that's a bit of a harsh response, but really don't care.
I love that Jones and a lot of CFL teams give players second chances. Because, let's face it, kids are stupid and they'll do stupid things, but three times, you gotta be out of there. It at that point, it's a pattern, and there just seems to be no changing a person after that. And if he does it while you're on the team, or while he's on the team, you can't have that kind of player associated with your team.
And before we get to the rant here, I want to just say good on Jeffrey Orridge and the commissioner's office for stepping up and having this domestic violence policy in place. And he banned Justin Cox, saying that if any team tries to sign him, I will not register that contract with the league. So basically saying, you're done. We want absolutely no part of it. And good on the CFL, good on the league, good on Commissioner Orridge for fast-tracking that and just making an example out of him. As good as he was on the field, good riddance. Like there's absolutely no space for that. And that actually brings us into our rant this week.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
All right, I'm going to take the rant this week, and my rant is based off of the Justin Cox situation, and here we go. First off, we here at the Piffles Podcast, we were some of the people to defend this guy last year when he signed with the team and performed well. We do believe in second chances, as Ferland mentioned, and this was Cox's Cox's second chance professionally. He was a rookie of the year last year and was really our best player overall, I think. He was extended in the offseason, and we were excited to have a key piece of our defense locked up for a few more years, but he blew it. The dude was charged for the third time with domestic violence. Let that sink in for a second. Third time charged. How many other incidents has there been? Because things like these usually happens a few times before police get involved. We've seen players like Jeff Knox Jr. have domestic charges before, and they've owned up to it. They've apologized and faced the media to talk about it and have become changed people. And those guys are the ones that we're willing to give second chances to. Justin Cox hasn't done that. He obviously has issues, and he hasn't learned a damn thing. We were wrong about this guy, and so was the Rider organization. They had no choice but to cut him. Absolutely no choice, and I applaud how quickly that they did. Regardless of how good this guy is on the field, he's an absolute piece of crap off of it. One domestic assault charge is too many, but three? Now maybe it turns out he's innocent. Still a good move to cut him because these problems find their way to him, or should I say, he seems to create these problems himself. Now I could keep going on him, but my rant is a little bit more geared towards the people actually defending this guy. Some of the comments I read were, and I quote, "We got your back," and "Rider Nation stands behind you." The hell we do. In absolutely no way do we ever condone hitting a woman. I typically agree with the innocent until proven guilty theory, but let's be real here. This is the third, again, reported time he's been charged. I think the worst thing was that I saw a woman defending this guy. Would you feel the same way if this player was dating your daughter? How anyone can defend Justin Cox here absolutely baffles me. Now, I'm 100% sure we don't know the entire story, and we probably never will, but all I know is that I'm sick of these players acting high and mighty like this and thinking they can get away with pretty much anything. And as much as I have said on here that Chris Jones is doing a good job, I'm starting to sour on him for knowing of players like this that have these issues and trying to sign them. Guys like Justin Cox, Greg Hardy. I don't care if the player is personally a jerk to fans as long as he's good on the field, but enough of the criminals. I understand Jones only wants to win, and that's fine, but you can do it without having a team full of a-holes. They have absolutely no spot in pro sports. And to you directly, Justin Cox, from me, good riddance, don't come back, go get the help that you clearly need. Rider Nation does not have your back, and those that claim they do have drank too much of that damn green Kool-Aid and need to take a look in the mirror, because if you're defending a habitual woman beater, you have some screws loose too.
Cosign.
There are very few things in the world I can't defend, and this is one of them. And you were right. We defended Justin Cox last year. We were very much fans of his on the field. But when it comes down to this, you get no defense from me. And I can't understand how anybody could stand behind him.
Like you said, this is his second chance professionally, third chance including college. At this point, it's a pattern. He needs help. He should go find it. League policy is recommending help to him, but they can't force him to go. It's all up to him to actually go get the help he needs. And if he doesn't, then this is just going to keep coming up, and good for Orange for banning him if this keeps coming up.
And we've all said this is the third time. We're not talking about three times over a 10-year period either. We're talking three times within the span of, what, 24 months? You know, not that it's any different if it's over a long period of time, but we're talking about a guy who, out of college, lost a job because of this, got a new job on a second chance, and it didn't change. I have a feeling we could all rant on this for an entire 90-minute show if we wanted to.
You can't fix stupid.
I just have a message for the women out there that are with men like this. You don't have to be. There are good men in the world. And if you're in a relationship like this, get help. Don't stay. Don't stay because you're afraid. Get help. There are people out there that will help you.
All right, well, let's move on here. That's enough about this guy. That we're done with him. Let's get to some CFL news here. We do have some sad news to report. Riders alumni president Terry Bullich, he was a former fullback for the Riders from 1973 to 1975. He was also the punter in 1975, has passed away. So we send our sympathies and our thoughts to his family and friends in this time. So Terry Bullich, thanks for looking after the Riders and the alumni in the last little bit. You'll always you'll always have a spot with us here at the Pivots Podcast. So thanks for everything you've done. Other CFL news, the big, some of the other bigger news. Montreal has traded SJ Green, their star wide receiver, to Toronto for a sixth round pick in 2017 and a conditional draft pick in 2018. Now, we don't have much time to talk about this. Really quick, your guys' take on that situation?
If he's healthy, it's a steal.
Is that what they call a salary dump?
Oh, yeah.
100%.
That's exactly a salary dump.
And that's the fallout from trading for and signing Darian Durant and all the other high-priced free agents that they signed in the offseason. They have to cut somebody.
But remember, we kept hearing that Montreal does not have salary cap problems.
The hell they don't.
You don't trade SJ Green for peanuts unless there's something there.
Hell, I'd trade a fifth-round pick for him. I'd up that offer.
And look at where we are with receivers.
Yeah, and I'd still trade for him.
Yeah, it's a great move for the Argos. The only problem is they've got a lot of high-priced players that got to stay healthy for them to win. They could have the most talented injured list, but you know, hopefully everybody stays healthy. That's what we want to see, the best players on the field. If everyone's healthy in Toronto, they're going to have a fairly decent team considering how it was looking just 2 months ago.
Well, and that's Jim Popp bringing in Jim Popp guys. So stick with what you know, and that's what Toronto looks like they're doing right now. And also in Edmonton, Brock Sunderland signed as the Edmonton Eskimos general manager. He was the assistant GM in Ottawa. The big thing we can take out of that is compensation. That magic word. Compensation is going to Ottawa in the tune of half of his salary is also going to be paid towards the Red Blacks, or to the Red Blacks from the Eskimos. The most entertaining part I thought about all of this is that they fired Ed Harvey because winning wasn't enough. And that was a direct quote. Winning wasn't enough. And in Brock Sunderland's opening address, he said, "My first job is to win." Sorry, Brock, that's not enough.
But he said his first job. He has other jobs.
Well, he's got 4 years, I think the deal is, to 3 years plus an option to prove himself.
I have to say this. The great move by the Eskimos. Classy but stupid move from the Red Blacks to give him away for for nothing. I'm shocked that there was actually no side compensation because the monetary portion is... Yeah, that's a policy. That wasn't determined between the teams. Ottawa said, yeah, interview him. If you want him, you can have him. 2 weeks before the draft?
That's the curious thing, is why you would trade him right before the draft.
Yeah, but Desjardins said that they haven't had any staff meetings, so the only knowledge he would have is his own opinion. That is a load of garbage.
Yeah, I call shenanigans on that, because if you're not talking about the draft 2 weeks before the draft...
Then you're not a model franchise.
But yeah, that's bigger news there, and we'll see how that turns out. But I'm going to disagree with you about letting him go for nothing. You're not going to let a guy not improve his career. I mean, he's getting a promotion, and you're never going to stop a guy from getting a promotion, whether you get something or not. I hate that there's this new gentleman's agreement where you get compensation. It should just be the guys. If you ask for permission and you get the permission and you want to hire the guy, good.
I agree with you to a point. In the early stages of the offseason, it should be promotion, go get it. But we're talking about 2 weeks before the draft. This is going to affect the Ottawa Redblacks, whether they want to admit it or not, whether they've had these discussions or not. This move will affect their future. They should be compensated for that in some way. Now, we're not talking about a star player, and we joked last week about, or last episode about giving them O'Day for James Franklin. Obviously, that's not what we would expect.
I like that people thought you were serious about that too.
But when you're like, we're talking like a late round pick, just something to make up for what will be a loss on the Red Black side, and not just because Sunderland is probably the next best GM that didn't have a job as a GM, but just how close it is to the draft and how close it is to the season. This will affect them.
I kind of agree with Steve here. It's during the special permission that the commissioner needs to sign off on it and the team needs to sign off on it. During this kind of time frame, there should be some kind of pick or a nag list or something going the other way. And I'm surprised there hasn't been much talk from Ottawa fans, considering they were the people that started the whole, along with Jeff Hunt, that started the whole compensate gate fiasco when Moss was hired from Ottawa to Edmonton, considering kind of the same situation just played out here. It's amazing that there hasn't been a whole lot said about it.
Well, I think it's that compensate gate that made them sit back and go, let's take the classy route this time and just let him go. Because they took a lot of heat for demanding, well, basically the Sun from the Eskimos after the fact. Just this entire move is curious to me. The Hervey firing 3 weeks before the draft and then this 2 weeks before,
That's the only thing that gets me. The move itself doesn't bother me. The compensation doesn't bother me. It's just the timing. It's just a really weird time. And again, like you said, it's going to affect the Red Blacks because obviously Brock Sunderland's been working with the Red Blacks, especially on their draft. I'm assuming that he would be an assistant GM, but they haven't had discussions, so
I don't allegedly
know. Yeah,
if I was a Red Blacks fan, I'd be a little concerned with that little comment from Desjardins, but that's just me.
And before we move on here, just want to remind everybody, join our Pick'em group. Go to pick'em.cfl.ca, search for our group, Piffles Podcast Pick'em. There's about 20 or so people in there so far. Not quite sure what we're going to have for a prize for the winner yet, but
we'll have something.
We'll have something. Maybe just a napkin with our signatures on it, but that's better than nothing, right?
Is it, though?
No, it's really not. We'll have something better than a napkin with our signatures on it. We'll be sharing the link again after the show is posted. So, again, Biffles Podcast, pick 'em on pick'em.cfl.ca.
Go through our profile on Twitter or on Facebook. The link is posted in there as well. So make sure you just scroll down a little bit. You'll see it. Can't miss it. So join that pick 'em and have some fun. Win some prizes. Okay, let's get down to it. We said we were going to do this last episode. We ran out of time, and we wanted to get to it this week before the CFL draft. We wanted to take a little bit closer look at the Ryder draft itself and what we think the team should be doing with their draft picks. Draft is coming up on Sunday, May the 7th, and the Riders have 9 picks in the draft here, and Canadians is where this team is really weak at right now still. We've improved that in the offseason, but it can only get better from there, so let's take a look. The Riders hold the second overall pick in the first round, and I'll start off here. Personally, who I want to see them pick is offensive lineman Jeff Gray out of Manitoba. I think he's going to be pro-ready. He could start, and we could push somebody else out to tackle. He can start at right guard, and I just think that could be a guard that we have for 10 years. Now, who I think the Riders will pick, because Chris Jones loves his big, giant dudes, I think they're going to take Mason Woods. He's 6'9", just a monster of a guy, but I think he's a little bit raw. He's going to be a little bit more of a project, kind of like a Josiah St. John. But right now, this team doesn't have that time to wait, especially on a guy that you're going to take second overall. You can't do that 2 years in a row with how bad this team needs O-linemen, Canadian O-linemen. So, but that's who I think they're going to take. Dark horse, just in case, Winnipeg with their first overall pick. If they take Jeff Gray, I want to see the Riders take defensive lineman Eli Ankou out of UCLA. Could really shore up that defensive line tackle position, and we finally have our set ratio breaker there.
Yeah. So the two names that I had down, I expect Gray to be gone at the first overall spot. Like you, I went flip side. I expect Chris Jones to go after best player available, and in my opinion, the best player after Jeff Gray is Eli Ankou. If they do want O-linemen, you're right, Mason Woods is the next Chris Jones guy, but he's not, for all intents and purposes, he's not ready. So I think they go with Eli.
Either way, I think with the first two picks that they have, the second and the 11th, they're going to go offensive line, defensive line, or defensive line, offensive line, and it depends what Winnipeg picks. My issue with Jeff Gray is he going to get NFL consideration? That's going to play a huge part in it. Luckily, the NFL draft comes before the CFL draft. But besides that, I kind of see them going with an Eli Ankou in the first round and then going offensive line with maybe more of a project player in the second round with that 11th pick.
In the second round, I see them going after, I would love to go back-to-back two O-line picks with the first and second round. So I'd love to see, I hope I say his first name right, Kadar, Spooner out of McGill, offensive lineman. I'd like to see them just stock up that O-line. That's where we need it. But otherwise, another guy I really liked out of the CFL week seen in the combine was defensive lineman Junior Luke, and I think he'll be available there in the second round where we pick. Kind of a dark horse in the second round that I think we might pick because we have Henock Mwamba as our middle linebacker, going with Chris Malumba out of Maine, just to back up in that middle position and be a special teamer right off the bat.
Now you went with Junior. I'm going to go with Senior. I don't think he's going to fall this far, but with NFL aspirations, there's a possibility he does, and I really hope he does. I want to see the Riders go, if he's available, at 11. Justin Senior out of Mississippi State. He'll be the same kind of a project guy long term, but I think he's got a great shot at a future in the CFL.
So like I said, I think it's going to be an offensive line, defensive line, or vice versa for the first and second round. So I see it being either an offensive lineman in the second round, like a Kadar Spooner, maybe a Braden Schramm, or a defensive lineman like Junior Luke, or there's a few other ones, Fabian Foote. There's a lot of good players on that offensive and defensive line that Jones could pick here, and I wouldn't be disappointed with any one of them.
Yeah, trenches have to be the first two picks. I think we're all pretty consensus on that. Third round pick, actually, Riders have forfeited for picking Kevin Francis in the supplemental draft last year. So they have two picks in the fourth round, 30th and 32nd. There's two names that I put in. I'm hoping both are available and that Edmonton at 31 doesn't pick one of them, so we can get both. I have wide receiver Mitch Picton out of Regina and his teammate, offensive lineman Jeremy Zver.
I also went with Mitch Picton at our second fourth round pick. I had another bit of a dark horse. Again, I don't think he'll fall this far, but I'm really hoping. And based on how we're going Canadian at the running back position, with that spot, I think we either take Johnny Augustine if he's available. And if he's available, he might be the most exciting player from that combine, in my opinion. But if he's not, then Ante Milanovic Leader would be another great option at running back. And we need to stock up that position if we're going to go Canadian at running back.
I kind of went the same way route as you guys. Johnny Augustine, I would love to see him in Saskatchewan. I think he's going to end up on one of the Prairie teams, either Winnipeg, Calgary, or Saskatchewan. And I would love to see him here because he was very exciting at the combine. Mitch Picton, obviously being the hometown kid, I would love to see him here too. I don't really necessarily have a name for the fourth round, but if there's a decent linebacker that we can take at this spot, I would love to see that too, just so that we have some depth behind Mwamba in case he gets hurt in a game or something like that, just to keep our ratio flexible.
And going with the fifth round on, I didn't pick any names. I went with positions that I think we should go after because, I'll be honest, I don't really know U sports that much. So I went, I'll just read the rest of mine really quick. Fifth round, 37th pick overall, I went with a running back there. Sixth round, 46th overall, O-lineman. Seventh round, 55th overall, D-lineman. Seventh round, 57th overall, defensive back. And in the eighth round, a 64th pick. Again, these are guys that probably aren't going to make the team, more long-term projects. I just went with another O-lineman.
For me, it was kind of along the same lines. Fifth, sixth, we got to stock up our line, whether it be O-line or D-line. That's where we need to concentrate on this draft. And I think that's exactly where they'll do this. They'll take some project players that, you know, maybe great depth now and starters in the future. For those later round picks, I really hope that we do what Calgary and BC seem to do, because they have such great depth at Canadian spots. They take those flyers on players with real NFL aspirations, those actual draft picks that you're not going to see for 2 or 3 years. I really hope we get the chance to take at least one of those, something down the lines that at worst is trade bait and at best is an NFL talent player with a CFL future.
I kind of went along the same lines for the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth rounds. Just stock up on some offensive and defensive linemen, shore up the trenches, and then basically go best available player. Because in this bottom half of the draft. In a good year, it's a crapshoot. So you may as well just pick whoever you think is the best and hope they stick.
Yeah, so general consensus, got to build the O-line and D-line. They say games are won in the trenches, and the Riders, especially on O-line, are hurting for Canadian talent. And that's where we think they're going to go with their big picks. So that's coming up in just over a week's time. The NFL draft is actually going to be happening this weekend. So we'll have a few more answers right away, and we'll see what Winnipeg does with their first overall pick, and then see what the Riders do after that. Now, while we take a look at what the Riders may do in the draft, we also want to take a look at how the other teams around the league are stacking up so far. And we want to start out west by looking a little bit closer at the BC Lions. Joining us from the BC Lions Den podcast is Brian. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. Now, your Lions made quite a few splashes in the offseason, most notably signing receiver returner Chris Williams to an already dangerous offense. What are your thoughts on the big signings from the Lions this year, and how do they help the team?
Well, I think Chris Williams will give us a little more depth, another guy to take pressure off Manny Arsenault for sure. The big question with him is, of course, how he comes back from that knee injury, which was a pretty bad one. So he claims to be ahead of schedule, and he's hoping to be ready for training camp. But I think it just gives the Lions that guy that can really stretch the field and take pressure off Manny Arsenault, because you got a guy like Brian Burnham who makes all the tough catches. Manny also does that, but they don't really have a guy that can really, really stretch the field like Chris Williams. So I think that's what they were looking for in signing him, and obviously that should make the offense even more lethal than it was going into the season.
So now that the Lions have actually signed David Foucault, who won the trade for Javon Olafioye?
Well, I guess we'll have to see, because, Foucault hasn't played a lot of football in the last couple of years. He's certainly a big specimen in 6'8", 315 pounds. He's got good feet, but, he hasn't had a lot of reps in game action for the last couple of seasons. So there's some out there that feel that, he may not have what it takes. I was hearing Farhan Lalji on the radio here the other day saying that there's a perception out there that he may have lost some progress by going to the NFL for 2 years, not playing a lot of games. So, he's certainly going to be given every opportunity to play. They also got another offensive lineman in Vincent Brown coming back from Montreal. So, I think it's a win-win for both teams. I think the deal had to be made. Obviously, when you sign a guy like Chris Williams and you re-sign a bunch of your free agents, there has to be some give in the salary management system. And obviously, Olafoye was a big ticket. He played very well for the Lions, never missed a game in the 6 years that he's here, perennial all-star. So you don't replace a guy like that easily. But, I think they'll look at starting Hunter Stewart out of that tackle spot, maybe having Foucault on the inside of the line. They're obviously going to go with a majority Canadian offensive line. So, I think we'll have to wait and see how Foucault performs. But it was a move, I guess, that had to be made, an unfortunate one. But Wally Buono's never been afraid to cut a veteran like that. And, he says he doesn't like to do it, but sometimes you have to make those tough decisions.
Now, the CFL draft is coming up here just around the corner. What are the biggest needs that the BC Lions need to address in the draft?
Well, I'm a big believer that you try and get offensive linemen in the draft, and I know the Lions have really shored up their depth there with Charles Viancourt and Hunter Stewart. I think they've got good Canadian depth there already, but I think at the same time, if you have a chance to get one of those guys, you have to take it. The Lions have two picks in the first round, so that gives them the luxury of maybe taking a more skilled player later on in that round. So, we'll see what happens, but I really think that their biggest need is probably on the defensive line. You lose Alex Bazzi, you lose Jabbar Westerman. I think that, they could probably take a defensive lineman with that second pick, but I'd still like to see them go offensive line with their first pick.
Now, you flipped it over to defense, which is nice because that's the next question I have on my list here for you. You guys lost Adam Big Hill to the New Orleans Saints. How big of a loss is that to the BC Lions D?
Well, it's a huge loss. I mean, you don't replace a player like Adam Big Hill right away anyway, but they do have some linebackers that have been in their system. Amy Cancalongo, Cameron Onko, both been with the team for a couple of years now, and Big Hill spoke highly of those two when he was on our podcast earlier in the offseason. So there's a couple of guys there that, that have been in the system. They brought in a couple more guys. Another guy, Sean Davis, has a shot, Adrian Clark. And I'm sure they're going to bring in some more guys, even at their mini camp in the next couple days here, to see what they have there. But I think they'll be okay. You know, I don't think, Solomon Elmaimon is still a standout player in this league. And we had the luxury of having two of those guys for many years. But, I kind of think that something might have had to give anyway if Big Hill hadn't have left, because I think, again, the salary management system would have come into place. And, I don't know if they would have re-signed Solomon Elmaimon if Adam Big Hill was still here. So, you always have to give and take. And I think that, good for Adam Big Hill. He's an awesome guy. And, I wish him all the best down there. I don't expect to see him back. I think he's going to make the Saints as a special teams player. So, good for him. And he's living out his dream. And, you can't keep these guys forever. Eventually they have to go, and either their time is up or they move on to bigger and better things. And, I think that the Lions probably have enough talent on their roster to compensate for it and groom somebody into that position while they have Elamimian on the field beside them.
So of all the new additions to the Lions this offseason, which one are you most excited for?
Well, obviously Chris Williams brings the most excitement factor, but I think they really addressed their kicking game as well. A lot of people were concerned when Richie Leone left for the Arizona Cardinals. I don't expect to see him back in the league either. I think signing Swayze Waters gives them a solid special teams addition, much needed, a guy that can do all three phases of the kicking game and do it pretty well. So I think they shored up that spot. Obviously, Chris Williams is a huge addition, and hopefully he can just stay healthy. But other than that, I think they did a good job of signing their key free agents, and another year together will be something that will be beneficial for them, and hopefully they can make more progress in that regard, and keep building this young team.
All right, now I know it's I know it's pretty early here in the off season, but we got to get your prediction. Where do you see the Lions finishing in the 2017 season?
Wow, I think it's going to be a dogfight in the West again. Winnipeg had a good year last year. They're going to be building on that. The Eskimos will still be strong. The Stampeders will still be strong. The Lions will be strong. And I think the Riders will be much improved as well. So, I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see them contending for a home playoff game again. I know Wally Bono has spoken several times this offseason that, they have to figure out a way to beat the Calgary Stampeders. And that's the team that's at the top right now in the West, and that's the team that the rest of us have to gun for. And, the Lions won a home playoff game last year against Winnipeg and got their butts handed to them in Calgary again. So, they played the Stampeders pretty well last year, but in the playoffs they were just in a different class. And, the Lions have to find a way to get over that hump and challenge for the top of the division and see if you can get that Western Final at home. And then that's progress, and you try and get to the Grey Cup from there. So, I see them contending for first, second place in the division, and we'll see what happens. But I think it's going to be a real tough year for all the teams in the West for sure.
Now, Brian, if people want more information on the BC Lions, where can they follow you?
They can follow us at bclionsden.ca. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We're also on Libsyn now. We've just moved the podcast over there, and we're going to be firing up the show next week with our draft preview with Marshall Ferguson and Gord Randall of Crown University Countdown. So we'll get the scoop on all the top prospects and what the Lions might do. So invite you to listen to that show next week.
Exciting time. CFL's back with mini camps, and real football is on its way. So Brian, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Now, we'll have much more coverage on the CFL draft. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, PifflesPod, on Facebook as well, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. So make sure you give us a like and follow on there. But time now to get to one of our favorite segments on the show, time to talk to a Rider alumni. Joining us this week is the man, the myth, the stash, former Riders punter Eddie Johnson joining us. Eddie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good. So what have you been up to since your time up here in the CFL?
Since my time in the CFL, God, I bartended in Vegas for about a year or two, I think right after, and then I was doing fixing hail-damaged cars, getting chased by tornadoes in the Midwest for a little bit, and then got tired of that and came back to California in probably, I think, end of 2013 or 14, somewhere in there. And then just kind of had a bug for seeing what acting was all about. So, you know, I wasn't really sure how to do it. My dad did a little bit of acting back in the 80s. And, you know, it's everything's changed completely since then. So just kind of jumped into it, man. Sort of figured it out, found a job bartending down in Santa Monica at the time, and a couple of the things I could do for work, keep my schedule open. And, yeah, I've just been doing that for the last, I think it's been 3 years now. So,
you know, tornado hunting, that's kind of crazy. How was that?
You know, we weren't really tornado hunting, but I mean, whenever there's a tornado, there is hail damage, right? So there's usually hail on the outskirts of the tornado. And I remember I was working at Cabo Wabo in Vegas, and, you know, it was just after March Madness, and one of my buddies called me. Said, hey, man, just hailed in Norman, Oklahoma. You want to cruise out? So I said, sure, let's do it. And came out, and it's just basically, you know, get in front of people and selling them on taking their car and fixing it, and it's a really good business. And did that for a little while. We had a shop in Moore, and this is the same time we just opened up a shop in Oklahoma City with that one. And literally within that week, I was at the shop in Oklahoma City. Moore got hit by that huge F5 tornado. I was actually driving one of my customers to the airport when it was going on. That's just, you want to talk about feeling helpless. Those things are big, mean, and scary, man. But, yeah, you know, did that for a while, and it's an interesting business, and done it in Denver as well, and I still do it sometimes for a few months. It's good money, so good and fun guys that I usually work with, too, in the industry.
You mentioned acting, and I got to ask, have you gotten any jobs? Are we going to be able to, like, notice you in the background of any movies or TV shows?
Yeah, I do a lot of hand acting. Yeah. No, I've done a couple commercials. Been fortunate to do some commercials, and that's been the majority of my success so far. I'm still trying to crack into that, you know, theatrical, just getting opportunities. So at first, you know, kind of tough just to even get in the door, and I'm just now starting to get some opportunities for films and TV. So commercials, anybody can kind of jump in and start doing those as long as you have to look for it. You usually get an opportunity. but for theatrical, though, a little bit of a process. So I've actually been working on some content that I'm going to create this summer, and just trying to get out more and more. It's tough to hit a base hit or a home run when you're not even at bat. So my biggest thing is just trying to get at bats right now.
Now, we have to ask, you're remembered here in Saskatchewan for having a really kick-ass mustache. Now, two-part question. A, are you still rocking that bad boy? And B, are you using that to your advantage in Hollywood to get gigs?
Here's the thing. I still have the mustache. It's just surrounded by a nice full beard. That's the thing.
Oh, so you went that route?
It's still there. It's still there. There's just a little bit of filler around it now. Yeah, I haven't. I will shave a mustache if need be, but I've had a full beard now for a while. So can't remember the last time I was clean shaven.
Now that
I should just double down though and hedge my bets on the mustache market though. I feel like that would be a worthy calling.
It worked up here.
Hey man, you know, it's like it was fantastic up there. I loved having it when I was up there. You know, I think the Canadian people respect a good mullet and a good mustache, and I dig that about you guys.
Hell yeah.
You were actually the first person I ever remember having a fan club just for your facial hair at the 2010 Grey Cup.
Hey, shout out to the Handle Boys. Love those guys. Yeah.
Now, speaking of your time up in Canada, do you have a particular memory that stands out? What was your best memory of playing up here?
Oh, God. I definitely had the most fun during the 2010 season when I played the most. I was kind of injured in 2011, but... Man, I think it'd have to be when I forget which game it was, or might have been a couple games, but we had a decent game, and some of the fans were chanting Eddie, you know, that was pretty cool. So that one's tough to beat for me.
So during
I had so many good memories up there, though. I mean that sometimes when you play football, you get on teams and they're just not cohesive, or that they're very clicky, and they're not nearly as fun to show up to work every day. That was such a fun team in 2010 to be on, that it was a blast showing up for work every day. Everybody was funny, had something, you know, unique and interesting about themselves, and it just was fun to show up every day, you know, especially to go out and do something you love. So there's a lot of good memories from that year.
So during your time in the CFL, we're not expecting you to name any names here, you know, incriminate yourself. But what's your best road trip story?
My best road trip story. God, where do we start here? I had a pretty good time in Toronto when we went out there to play. We went out in Toronto to play, and it was the, what's like the French art thing they have going on there, and everything stays open till 4 in the morning. Forget the name, but there's a big like art festival where you can go look at art up until 6, 7 in the morning in Toronto. And we happened to play Toronto that week on the road. And I think we went to the Drake Hotel. That was a pretty good time. I think, you know, came across some fun groups of people. So I can't get too detailed about that, though. I'm sure this is a family show.
Oh, be as detailed as you want.
Yeah, but it was good. It was a great time. And, you know, anytime, one thing that's great about the CFL is, you know, getting to stay in a city, you know, that night as opposed to flying out right away. That is kind of nice, you know. Obviously, you know, you have to make sure you do the right things and don't get in trouble in another city. But, you know, you don't really get a chance to, you know, in the NFL, they fly you out immediately. You know, they don't give you a chance to get in any sort of trouble. So it was nice to go on the road, and sometimes it worked out where we were able to get a victory and then go out and have a really good time, because maybe, you know, it was either Halloween or something going on in that city where we were at. And, you know, God, Grey Cup was a fun week too, man. You know, that was a great time. And, you know, Canadian folks just have, you know, they're just really good at having a good time. I got to give it to you guys.
Now, we talked about the Handle Boys and the fan club that you had. Outside of them, do you have any particular fan interaction story that kind of stands out during your time as something that was really kind of cool?
Think about... I got to be careful here. There was this time when it was like one of the first nights we were in Edmonton for the Grey Cup. It was earlier in the week. And I think I had gone out, and one of the nights we didn't have any issues with curfew or nothing. And I'd gone out, and I think it was kind of late, and I was with a friend, and we were getting a gyro, you know, at, I think, 2 in the morning. And I had, like, my suit stuff on or whatever. And a bunch of Rider fans showed up, and they were like, Eddie, what are you doing here, you know? What's going on? Sort of deflect what they were getting at, I started a huge Saskatchewan Go Riders cheer inside this gyro restaurant at 2 in the morning. That was pretty fun. Otherwise, you know, God, there's just so many good Rider folks out there that I was able to meet when I was out there. It's tough to just list one. There's so many cool fans out there.
Now, outside of football, you mentioned the jobs that you had, but who is Eddie Johnson? Like, what do you like doing?
Who is? That's a funny question. You know, I like taking a little bit of time to go in, throw some steel, work a little bit of rust off the body. I enjoy that. Not that I'm a bodybuilder by any means, but I like to go in and work out a little bit, just like I think any old athlete would. And then, you know, I don't know, man. That's an interesting question. I'm just a guy doing the deal, man. No, I don't know. I don't really think about it in that regard. I'm just always trying to do something that keeps me entertained, I guess. You know, I've always had an issue with paying attention, whether I was in high school or whatever. You know, I always was, never was the best student as far as showing up and being engaged and normal stuff. So for me, you know, even though there's other ways to make money and do different things. I've always wanted to chase kind of after, you know, what gives me that nervous feeling and what excites me. So, you know, at one time that was football, and you know, that naturally went away, and now it's, you know, moved towards acting and entertainment. So I guess that's pretty much it on that regard.
So one last question for you. Besides the commercials that you've been in, what are you watching on TV right now?
What am I watching on TV? God. Nothing right now, to be honest with you. I'm like the guy who goes back and then watches Breaking Bad 4 years later. I was like, God, that was such a great show, and everybody's already over it. You know what I mean? But I binge watch stuff. You know, I watch a lot of, to be honest with you, I watch a lot of podcasts, a lot of video podcasts. A lot of Joe Rogan stuff. I watch more things along those lines. I'm always up for comedy. You know, as far as lately, there's been no particular shows in general that really have my interest. But, yeah, you know, I kind of just mostly watch sports, I guess.
I'm with you on that. And one last one before we let you go here, Eddie. What's next for you?
Man, you know, we'll see. I'm just doing everything that I can in my power to advance myself in this realm. You know, just want to do fun things that are, you know, keep my interest and get me out of bed every day.
All right, Eddie, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. And you guys take it easy up there.
Hey, you too. Thanks. That was Eddie Johnson joining us here on the Piffles podcast. Man, I wish I could rock a stash like that man had in his time here with the Riders.
Yeah.
I wish I could. That was just great.
Insert, he had better facial hair or more facial hair than you have hair. No? No.
My hair's getting pretty long, actually.
That stash was beautiful.
Your hair is getting long?
Yeah, check it out. Look at that. There's so much hair. Man. There. Look at this. You can, like, spike it up, like, half an inch. That's fantastic.
You have a mohawk there.
And my hat's getting tighter. It's great.
God. Ooh.
God. And my youth size hat. It's getting tighter. It's great.
Yeah, hippie.
Yeah. But anyway, that's going to do it for us this week on the Piffles podcast. Thanks so much for joining us. Next week's show, we're going to have the latest Rider news. We'll have the draft coming up right away. So if there's any moves before then, we'll talk about that. We're going to keep going with our team-by-team preview. We're going to hop over to the East Division next week. We're going to talk about the Montreal Alouettes with Cliffy D of the Montreal Alouettes Flight Deck Podcast. We'll also be joined by a special guest. Her name is Amanda Ruler, and she actually plays for the Legends Football League for the Georgia Steam. But she is from here in Regina, and if you've seen her on Facebook, on Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, she's all over those. She does CrossFit. She's a workout machine. We're going to have her in studio just talk about football and just what she's doing. And Stevie actually had a chance to meet her at CFL Week, so this will be kind of cool. I'm looking forward to that. We'll have another Piffles player profile, see if we have a rant for the week, and we'll just see what else we can do on the show next week. So until then, thanks for joining us. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, at PifflesPod. You can follow me, at RealAlexD.
You can follow me, at Safamod.
And you can follow me, at Fernie635, and I'll also be doing a guest spot on Rouge Radio this week, so make sure you check their latest episode, too.
And you can also follow Amy, who stepped out for some unknown reason. You can follow her at CFL Hottie Bowl. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/PifflesPodcast. Like us on Instagram, just search Piffles Pod. This has been the Piffles Podcast, brought to you by the Pest Poutine in the Prairies, Coney Island Poutine Cafe in Regina. Thanks for listening.